Blog Talk Radio.
Monday here in Fairfax, Virginia. We have trees falling over, branches dropping so often it sounds like there's a firefight outside my window, and we are safe and warm here to talk to you today on Military Monday. My name is John Gresham, and in this season of cold but giving, it's time to talk a little bit about the question of giving. There are many charitable foundations and organizations that are out there asking you for real support with your checkbook and donations to help them in their particular kind of giving. Now, one question that keeps coming up, because fraud and waste and abuse is part of the nature of the American society these days, is who can you trust to go and take that dollar you give a charitable organization and get as much of that dollar as possible out to the people it's intended to help? There are very few ways for you as an individual giver to know that. On occasion, it's not so hard. You can look at an organization like the Fisher House, and they being a bricks and mortar operation, you can go and you can look at their website and see. They're building buildings for people to go and live in during the time when their loved ones are being treated at military hospitals and care facilities. They have a real-world way of showing what they do. But what about an organization which claims to go and be helping veterans or their families with cash donations, funding donations, and such? How do you tell who are the good guys and the guys who are just trying to line their pockets? Well, today we're going to go and talk about the good guys, or at least one organization full of good guys. And this is an organization I've been familiar with for most of my life. Once upon a time, there was a rescue mission to try and get our hostages out of the American embassy in Tehran back in 1980. It did not go well. And in the process, we lost a number of special operations professionals in the desert of Iran. They left behind a number of children, children who, frankly, are not as well taken care of as dependents are today, and most importantly, who was going to be there for them when they got older and they needed help in their educations and such. We have a guest here today who is an old friend of mine. His name is Colonel Neil Zimmerman. Neil and I first met almost 15 years ago, just before Thanksgiving, 1998, when I was researching my Special Forces book for Tom Clancy. We met at an airport terminal, and we flew to the Persian Gulf. And for the next week, Neil Zimmerman was my traveling companion, buddy, protector, and all kinds of other roles. And over the years, we've stayed in touch. Today, Neil is retired, but he also is the Washington area, the capital area chairman for what is called the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. And we are going to talk to Neil about the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, what it does, how it does it, a little bit about how they raise their funds, and what other things they do. Neil, are you there, my man?
I am, John. Always a pleasure.
Neil, I want to start out by saying that when we talk about Special Operations Warriors, you qualify. You were a Green Beret, both enlisted and an officer. When I first knew you, you were a major. You retired out of colonel. You also qualified as a ranger. So you're the real deal. I mean, this is a professional from that profession talking about taking care of people who used to be associated through a loved one. Talk a little bit about what is the Special Operations Warrior Foundation and why do we have it today? When did it start?
Well, John, you alluded to it a little bit earlier. It did start in 1980. It actually spawned from the Bill Simmons Scholarship Fund. It was a debacle in 1980. We were trying to do great things, but everyone has to remember at that time we weren't a SOCOM. We weren't a joint Special Operations Command yet. So everybody had different SOPs, standard operating procedures, and so forth. And it was a failed attempt, but it was a great attempt. And those folks that were on the ground, some of them as early as 2 weeks early, to set up the landing zones and so forth for the different folks coming in. I mean, it was an awesome attempt to do something really, really extravagant. Well, we lost some folks, and we left 17 children in the wayside. And to make it the shorter version is we don't leave our families. We have a brotherhood amongst the special operators. It doesn't matter which branch of the service that you're in, as we take care of our own. So with those 17 children without dads, the rest of us became uncles, and that's the short version. But it grew, and it continues to grow, and we'll continue to be there 20 years from now taking care of the kids that are in the pipeline now.
Those eight Special Operations Warriors who died in the collision between the C-130 tanker and the helicopter, you said they left behind 17 children. Those are 17 kids that are going to grow up without fathers, but on top of which, they are facing a major pothole in the road when they get out of high school. How are these kids going to go to college? Who's going to pay for it? Because dad isn't going to be there. Mom is probably going to be struggling along for the rest of her life, making ends meet and doing the things moms do. Who got the idea of funding scholarships for those 17 kids?
Well, actually, during that time frame, it was the special operators themselves. The three different organizations came together. I mean, the Bill Simmons Green Beret, who he's renowned for risking his life time and time again on rescue operations, and then the Family Liaison Action Group that was established for the 53 Iranian hostages. They all came together, and the third one was the Spectre, the Air Force Gunship Association. They all collided and actually came together to form the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. So, in essence, the Special Operations Warrior Foundation was then molded together the same exact year that SOCOM came to fruition, when we all decided, okay, we need one joint command where we all can talk to each other and get things done in the special operations community coordinated and correctly. So we did it ourselves, to answer your question.
And you guys have a simple mission. I mean, it's not that difficult to explain. Please tell us what your foundation at its core, what is the single major mission statement that your foundation makes?
Look, I mean, you have to go back to the foundation of the Special Operations Forces. If you go across all of the services, there's 70,000 of us that are highly trained and well-equipped. A lot of the guys still on active duty are doing everything that they can and then some. And then all of us that are still that are retired now are still in the supporting roles of making sure that the organization runs and so forth. The basic motto of the premise is basically make sure that our children have an opportunity for a higher education. Make sure that my son or daughter, if I fall in combat or in a training mission, make sure that my son or daughter has the opportunity for higher education. That was the original premise. But we have made some exceptions to policies, which we can talk about in the future interview here.
So simple mission, you're going to raise money and you're going to pay to send kids to college, to vocational schools, to something that gives them the skills and knowledge to move on in their lives, correct?
You got it, John. And we don't care whether they decide to be a doctor, a lawyer, a nurse practitioner, a motorcycle repairman or woman. Or we don't care what they want to do with a higher education, but we're right there beside them. And one of the unique things about the foundation is that, you know, we identify the children once the loss happens, immediately. So say you've got, you know, you've got a dad that goes down and he's 25, 27. The kid's probably 2 or 4 or 6. We immediately reach out to that child at the younger ages and establish a relationship with them with, you know, cards and making contact and so forth. And when it comes to the appropriate year, be it 12, 13 years for them, we start talking about what do you want to do? Where do you want to go to school? Are you interested in school? And so forth. So we reach at the immediate need. We fill that gap that dad left.
And this is a continuing process for the next 10, 15 years, whatever it takes, until they decide to exercise the option to take advantage of what your organization can offer them in the way of funding and scholarship, correct?
That's exactly correct. I'll tell you, John, we're going to be there 20, 30 years from now. We have that many children in the pipeline now. I mean, it's phenomenal to know that the rates of return here. When we get to speak about, you know, the Special Operations Warrior Foundation and its 4-star evaluations from different groups, it's just phenomenal. We are 1% of those organizations out there that do it right. 98% of what we bring in goes right back to the kids. We're operating at under 5% administrative costs right now, and we're making a huge difference. We're talking, when you talked earlier about the original 17 children, those kids are doctors and lawyers and spokesmen now. They are adults, and they're moving out and still, you know, they're sharing their wealth. And a lot of them, quite frankly, work for the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, some of them full-time, as counselors, grief counselors, and show up on the scene to counsel young kids who just lost their dad.
Now, that point you just made about the very high throughput rate, 90% plus, in other words, for every dollar that comes into your coffers, more than 95% of it goes back out into the scholarship dollars and the benefits for the kids, right?
That's an easy figure. It's more like 98%. But let me give you another fact, a couple other figures that will baffle some of the listeners. You know, when you take a look at folks that, you know, the kids that are going through school right now, so let's just say high school. If you get our kids that are going through high school, of the 80 or 90% that graduate, you know, and then we put them into, an extended or a higher level schooling, 80 or 85% of those children decide to go to school in a college or a follow-on school. 98%, John, 98% of the kids we put in higher education graduate.
So in other words, there's going to be a certificate. There's going to be an end game that they're going to come out positively on the education end.
Yep, there's no question about it. And it's not just about the education per se, it's also about the relationships, the long relationship that we have with their family, and we'll continue to have. We've extended some of the we've not bent the rules, but we've gone off the charter just a little bit sometimes when it's absolutely necessary. As you well know, you've been downrange with me. You can't keep to the script all the time, and you've got to make things happen. Therefore, you have to show up with the right goods at the right time and doing the right thing. So the Special Operations Warrior Foundation has been in the position to step in and make some differences. And I'll give you one or two examples of that were not just related to, you know, scholastics and paying for the school and so forth, but we take it a step further. You know, if a kid's getting ready to get on an aircraft and fly to Tulsa, Oklahoma for his college beginnings as a freshman all by himself, there's no dad to go put him in an apartment and make him comfortable, and his car breaks down on the way to the airport, he makes that call. And where would that call normally go? It would go to dad. Dad's not alive. So it comes to us, and he says, I think, guys, I should probably forgo this next quarter and just start next year or next quarter when it's fresh, and, you know, my car's broke down, I can't get on the airplane. Do we allow that to happen? Nope. You meet him. You take him to the airport. You get his apartment set up on the other end. You set up his computer. You get him enrolled in the classes, and you get him going. And we didn't let that kid down. But, see, we take the place we can never take the place of the dad. I didn't mean to insinuate that, but we step in the void.
And this comes with, as you say, a 4-star rating. Now, who rates charitable organizations? When you say you have a 4-star rating and you've had it for years, who is the rating organization that tells the world who's naughty and who's nice in the charitable and giving world?
Well, the one that's most notable that I'm aware of, now there may be others, but Charity Navigator is an independent evaluator of these kinds of organizations. And for 8 years straight, we have, you know, Special Operations Warrior Foundation has received a 4-star rating. And to receive a 4-star rating for 8 years in a row, of all the people they rate, that's less than 1%. So it's not about, to us, it's not about money for us. It's about doing the right thing and making sure the money gets put in the right places at the right time to make a difference.
Now, that kind of consistency and quality in what your organization delivers doesn't happen by accident. It's a question of leadership. Now, I've known you now for about 15 years. I'm aware you're a pretty competent individual, and consequently it's no surprise to me that you're the local chairman here in the Capital Area region. But talk a little bit about the leadership at the top of the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. And let's start with Admiral Joe McGuire, who, if that name is familiar to our listeners, it's because you saw him on 60 Minutes talking about a special operations mission last night. But Joe McGuire is a lot more than just a talking head about one failed mission by SEALs. Talk a little bit about Joe and what kind of a guy he is and the people around him who lead your foundation.
My pleasure. This is a great group of folks to be mentored by. You know, I'm very much junior to the majority of the folks that are on the board of directors, and Joe has been a good friend for the last 4 or 5 years in particular. We came in contact through the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, but as one of the J3, the operations officers forward in the Middle East in the early years, you know, just before 9/11, you know, I had some SEALs working for me and so forth, because we got intimate early in business. So this is a guy who's a stand-up, no kidding. You know, I'll give you one example. During the government shutdown in October, you know, we lost some guys 9,000 miles away. Joe had just taken his seat as the president and CEO of the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. He hadn't even moved into his office yet, and he got the call that we had some folks down. Now, you have to know that Special Operations Command and their Coalition Care Unit are tightly tied to the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, and therefore all the tentacles down to the me's and you's that know the community and how to reach out to them are all connected. So as the calls went on, this is during the shutdown, we got the call that you know, some of those Rangers coming back would not be cared for properly, nor were their families. We took up the ball. But about Joe, stand-up SEAL commander, just a fine gentleman, well-connected. And not only Joe, you talk Carl Steiner, all these guys. You know, I was a SF baby, a Special Forces baby. I joined the Special Operations community at the age of 18. I wore my first Green Beret at 19 and a half as a Special Forces medic. So these are all icons to me, but then they all know me too. So, you know, when you're talking about General Holland and the likes of, you know, Admiral Olson and General Potter and so forth, these are no sloughs here. So the board of directors is top-notch quality folks, well embedded in the special operations and the national security issues of this nation. And so they're really strong, to answer your question, John.
And, of course, as you pointed out, you've got direct connections to Tampa and guys like Admiral Bill McRaven and General John Mulholland, not to mention the other component commanders like Charlie Cleveland down at Fort Bragg. They know you guys. They trust you guys to take care of their people and their people's people.
When Admiral McRaven and McLeven makes a call and says, I can't get something through on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I'm stuck, you know, the shutdown. And this actually happened. I have it in print, and I talked to Joe this weekend before I spoke with you to make sure it was okay to share. Admiral McRaven was stopped. He tried with both the chairman and the Army Chief of Staff to try to obtain the funding. Didn't work, and it wasn't working fast enough. You know, right now, speed is of the essence when somebody's lost a loved one. You have to be there right away to make a difference. And so the Special Operations Warrior Foundation stepped in, provided those funds, and so forth. So that's the difference, being in the right place with the right things at the right time, and that's how we do business.
Outstanding. Let's talk a little bit about the business of the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, because your business, yes, it's a people business, but it is a money-driven people business because you're paying for tuition, you're paying for books, you're paying for laptops, you're paying for all the stuff that a parent would normally save for years to be ready to buy when that son or daughter goes off to college or vocational school. I'd like to talk a little bit about how you guys fundraise and break it down into the different kinds and levels of fundraising that you do. And let's start with the fact that, yes, you do have corporate donors. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, that's no surprise, actually. You know, a lot, like when I mentioned some of the board of directors and some of the connections that they have just from where they've sat when they were on active duty and now where they sit in a new job, you have connections. And so most big businesses that are in tune with the Special Operations Command and known along our community lines are in fact some way contributing, whether it be by dollars or by services, whether they be named or unnamed. But so, for instance, there may be, I don't know, 15 to 20, you know, senior companies that put in a significant amount of money every year to make sure that the base stuff is covered. Then there's smaller companies that come in that are just starting out, retired special forces guys that are starting their own company. They do the grassroots things at their company level. And then there's others that just do volunteer organization types of things, you know, have people sponsor them for a marathon or have people sponsor them for a boat race or do a motorcycle run of that nature. But everything is important. I will give you a couple of figures here. I mean, last year, the Special Operations Warrior Foundation took in almost $11 million in donations. Okay, $11 million in donations in 1 year. That includes about $1 million from the Combined Federal Campaign, which you're well aware, and for some of the listeners that may not know what the Combined Federal Campaign is, it's a fund that's mostly given to by military personnel themselves or Department of Defense employees, and you can find that in the CFC giving section. So out of that $11 million that came in, we gave out $4 million in scholarship grants, counseling, financial aid, beneficiary support, and so forth. So we've got a really, really good track record, and we continue to impress people, and we want to continue to make sure that our kids are taken care of.
And just because, you know, you are not an independently wealthy former special operator. You have a job just like the rest of us, and your company is supportive. They're letting you take an hour and use their phone. Talk a little bit about the support that your company gives both to Special Operations and the Special Operations Warrior Foundation.
Well, I work for the Oracle Corporation, and most everybody should know that. We're worldwide and control an awful lot of telecommunications business and, you know, software and hardware and so forth. But for our connection with the Special Operations Command in particular is very good. I work in a place called the National Security Group, and I'm the Special Operations Command's conduit into the best of the best technology for the problem sets that they have. And so given that, we have a really good relationship on the surface, and then there's a lot of different facets to different parts of the Special Operations Command and the Special Operations Warrior Foundation where we support from afar or below the radar. So Oracle is very supportive in that realm. And, you know, prior to being with Oracle, I was also with MITRE, and they did the, you know, something similar, not quite as grand as Oracle. So the bottom line is I can touch just about any need that they have from a corporate perspective there if they have those needs and bring them to us.
And it's worth noting that this is in the character of Special Operations, that you guys have a nickname. You're called the Quiet Professionals. If you're doing your job right, nobody ever knows you were involved. And that isn't just something that's operationally oriented. It's also how you live your lives and even how you do your own charity, is it not?
That's true. That's very true. I mean, you know, from where I sit now, John, and, you know, like you said, you and I go back a ways. This is kind of neat in that, you know, 15 years later we're talking about this because Oracle's got a lot of assets, and the Special Operations Command needs some smart heads, and we've got that. And so, we're leaning forward to assist them the best way that we can in a quiet way and get some things done. And no recognition needed on any part.
So we got your corporate donations talked about. Let's talk about the mid-level stuff. And what I'm talking about are more local, regional-type fundraising efforts that go on. And we'll go into greater detail on this in the next segment. But you and the other chair people around the country really do some impressive regional and local fundraising. And we're talking tens of thousands of dollars raised at individual events. Talk a little bit about that kind of work that you guys do.
Well, that's really where, as I spoke earlier, some of the guys that are coming out from active duty, you know, we all have this sense of we've made it, okay? So we knew about this organization when we were, you know, for the Navy, maybe lieutenants or you know, some of the enlisted guys, and then all, you know, to where I was a captain deployed during the first Gulf War, and I knew of the organization. I had one child and was expecting another. They knew about me, and everything worked out okay for me, but it didn't for others. So we have this sense of giving back, and so we like to sponsor our own things, do our own things that are local, and we like to touch people's lives one heart at a time. I'm not one that normally would, you know, do some large event for hundreds or hundreds of thousands, but I'd rather see the smile on one guy's face or one family's face that said, you made a difference, Z-Man.
In other words, now let's talk a little bit about what these events are. Some of them are sponsored runs, biking events.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for all I know, there are Special Operations Warrior Foundation bake sales and other things, correct?
No, they're like you said, they run the whole gamut. You know, companies have, you know, put teams together to run in different events, marathons, biking events, boating events, you name it. Normally, if you go to any kind of high-class, competitive meet, you're going to see somebody wearing the logo of the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. For instance, my wife has become an avid biker, not only a motorcycle rider, but also a pedal bike, which she's extremely good at. Well, I took her to a run that she was, you know, going to partake in for the first time. And here, you know, right in front of her were four riders from, you know, representing the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. I don't know how many times I've run into that and different events around the Washington, D.C. area. And, you know, as a layman, as a volunteer for the Special Operations Warrior Foundation in the D.C. area, I hear about most of the events, but not all of them. Now, I started, you know, in 2003, I started a motorcycle event called the Battlefield Run, and I was quite stuck at the time, a little frustrated at the time. I was working at a place called, you know, I was up in the mountains of Pennsylvania, and I was working for Secretary Rumsfeld personally, and I felt stuck. So I came up with this idea to start a motorcycle event from Leesburg, Virginia to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, through four states, 19 counties, and three national battlefields, and do it in 3 hours and keep everybody safe. So I don't know what possessed me to start that, but 10 years later, it rides on.
And with that, I would like to talk more about that in the next segment, but before we do, I'd like to talk a little bit about the little donations. These are people who, for reasons of their own, they send you a check. They send you, they They go ahead and, as you say, they make donations through the CFC program. Talk about those small donations and what those mean to your organization at this point.
That's kind of crazy nice, and it's really the it's really the sweetness on top of everything because, you know, when, like, for instance, when we start my motorcycle run at a place here, Best Buy is a great sponsor of ours here in Leesburg, Virginia. People come out of the Best Buy and say, what's this all about? What are all these bikes doing here? And it's like, well, here's some brochures. They come right back, and they give me a check, or they give me $100 or $200, you know, cash. So they put it to good use. That's crazy. You know, I got a message from some of the folks down south in Tampa, and they got a couple of FedEx folks that come by, you know, dropping off things on a daily basis. The FedEx lady dropped $60 and said, heard about the Rangers that went down. Here's $60 out of my pocket. My mother, who's retired, you know, 84 years old, this is a gal who was a Air Force NCO wife in Libya when we had a base there, takes out of her savings $200 to give to me to support the battlefield run. It's crazy, but it's also very heartwarming, and it makes a difference.
We're going to talk more about Neil's battlefield run after these network messages, but come on back after we finish our network promos, and we'll talk more about the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. This is Military Monday.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network, tune in to host Daria Ann for Right Stream Tuesday. Daria Ann interviews talented authors in a variety of literary genres, from urban fantasy and historical romance to autobiography and science fiction. Right Stream Tuesday celebrates the creativity that flows through every author. It also delves into the all-important publishing and marketing aspects of writing, including the benefits and pitfalls of independent publishing versus traditional publishing, and how to effectively use social media for success. Right Stream Tuesday with Daria Ann. Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the Right Stream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's LISATARVES. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book, and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network. Tune in to Military Monday with host John D. Gresham, author, military historian, and journalist. John delves into a unique aspect of U.S. military history, as well as current events and issues affecting our men and women in uniform. Featuring exceptional guests, military experts, and authors, Military Monday with John D. Gresham entertains, informs, and encourages listeners to support those who put it all on the line for freedom. Military Monday with John D. Gresham, Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network.
And we're back on Military Monday. My name is John Gresham. I'm your host. And our guest today is Colonel Neil Zimmerman, the Capital Area Regional Chairman for the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. You still with us there, Neil?
Yep, John, I'm right here.
Excellent. Now, we get to have a little fun now because we get to talk about your favorite fundraising event. And take the time you want to. Let's talk about this battlefield run because I've participated in this, and it is a whole lot of fun, especially if you're a history nut and a Civil War enthusiast like myself. Talk a little bit about what it is, you wanted to do, and how do you generate tens of thousands of dollars out of what is frankly a nice ride in the country on a Saturday afternoon in the fall?
That's a great question, John. I wish I would have asked myself that before I got myself into it. Ten years ago, I alluded to it earlier, I was doing a job up in Pennsylvania at Site R for Secretary Rumsfeld, and I felt a little bit disconnected in 2003 because I couldn't do much after my time on the Joint Staff. I rewrote the National Military Strategy for the War on Terrorism with 300 and some odd of my best friends, which gave SOCOM, you know, an awful lot of parameters that they didn't previously have. So I had to give back in this way. So over the course of 10 years, the first year I had 23 bikes, I guess, and we made, you know, I don't know, $40,000, something, not even $40,000, maybe $4,000. The whole idea for me was to somehow to link Leesburg, Virginia, and Gettysburg, Pennsylvania together through a motorcycle ride, 120 miles through four states, 19 counties, three national battlefields. We do a solemn, you know, slow ride through Gettysburg where folks, whether they be from the north or the south or from another country, can appreciate the blood that was lost there. So we turned this into a positive thing for the Special Operations Warrior Foundation 10 years ago, and it's continued to thrive. And actually, we just had our 10th, which was really good. But this last year, John, it had me going a bit because we had, you know, the three S's. You know, sequester, Snowden, and shutdown. And so Z-Man was just a little bit apprehensive about sponsorship. Where was I going to get money from? Big companies weren't willing to give much, if anything at all. A lot of times they just wrote me a note that said, we can't do it this year. We're laying people off. So I did the grassroots thing, and I just went to local places and asked them if they wanted to support for smaller amounts, and everybody, John, stood up. And, you know, I kind of lost my army over the last 2 years of folks that were available to do security and protection and so forth. And, you know, so there's a good story there about an organization that stepped up to fill the gap as well. So the battlefield run, I was going to end it this year, and this was going to be the last one in 2013, but it will ride on in 2014.
Now, you talk about sponsoring. This is corporate. This is individuals. In other words, you're using all the different sponsorship tools to go ahead and ensure that when people ride, they're generating revenue with every mile that they're on their bikes, right?
You got it. Exactly.
And I've participated in one of these, and I'm going to say right up front, the one 2 years ago is notable because it started out on what looked like was going to be a grim, rainy day there in front of Best Buy. I mean, we were all wet and wondering if we were going to be riding safely and all that, and yet we just started out, and there you were in the lead, and I was following in my Jeep, taking pictures and notes. What does the route start out? You talk about starting at the Best Buy in beautiful Leesburg. Where does it go first?
Well, it goes through we go through Leesburg proper and past the Leesburg Cemetery, which we count as the first battlefield. Then through Antietam, through Virginia, then up through West Virginia. Then we touch Maryland, and then we end up in Pennsylvania for a nice trip through, you know, Gettysburg National Park itself. But the neat thing about this is that every year that I've done this, I have a different set of characters that are involved in pulling this off. You can imagine trying to organize a motorcycle ride through four different state jurisdictions, 19 different counties, and three national battlefields. I've got lots of attention and sometimes a lot of help, and sometimes I have absolutely no help from local law enforcement. So we have to do it ourselves. That's another facet of where the special operations community steps up and has had to do so on many occasions. Sometimes we have, you know, some really good local support to get us out of Leesburg properly, get us on our trail. Other times we don't, and we have to do it as if, you know, on our own accord, just like we would do 6,000 miles away. So it's been a good experience over the last 10 years, and, you know, this year is going to be one of those where, you know, I turned it over this year to an organization that I really respect, and I think these guys are a solid group of folks, and of course, I'm not going to let them off easy. I'll continue to mentor them and counsel them through the next year, but I did turn the rides, organization, security, everything over to the Pipefitters Union Motorcycle Club, the Archangels here. You know, they're a nonprofit organization that's right here in Northern Virginia. They're both current and retired military guys, current and retired law enforcement officers, firefighters, and so forth. They know how to ride. They know what it's all about. And so I gave them the lead for 2014, and we're really looking forward to a really good ride September 20th of 2014, where the pipe hitters, the Archangels themselves, take over. And guess what, John? Z-Man doesn't have to be blocking any intersections anymore. I can just ride.
And Z-Man likes that. And let us just say, you know, for anyone who has not had the pleasure of being in the Mid-Atlantic area in September, I don't know if there's a more beautiful place on earth than early fall here in Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania. It is God's country here, and just the pleasure of taking that ride puts you in a great mood. But then you get up to Gettysburg, and I remember 2 years ago we were at a local motorcycle dealership up there just east of the town, and you put on one hell of a great barbecue and show.
Well, actually, I got to, hats off to Battlefield Harley-Davidson. They've stepped up. I mean, I had another restaurant that I was going to the first couple of years, and I quickly outgrew them. But Battlefield Harley-Davidson in Gettysburg, and actually, you know, some of the guys up there in Gettysburg are some of those that have actually made this ride doable. I have local police officers that have a very small jurisdiction in Pennsylvania that will hightail it down and escort us when they can on this ride. They know all the back roads, all the radio frequencies and so forth, and they clear the lanes for me. It's very much like an unconventional. I'm telling you, John, it's like I'm in a third world country sometimes. Like, if you know who you know and you can trust them, you get things done, and it works extremely well. I tell you, over the last 10 years, we had one flat tire, which we fixed. We had one guy run out of gas, which we fixed. We had one guy slip in some gravel, and we fixed him. He did have to go to the hospital, but, you know, bottom line is, when you're talking 180 bikes sign up for a ride of this nature through, you know, curvy roads and, you know, wooden bridges and so forth to take, you know, and 180 sign up, but then 230 show up for the ride, to take 230 bikes through four states, 19 counties, and three national battlefields in 3 hours and do it safely, that's a special operation.
And let's not kid ourselves. The sound of that many Harleys in that kind of proximity is impressive.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. So, I just dug deep this last year and have, you know, really good support. I got to, you know, the two things that were really bothering me about pulling it off this last year is I didn't have adequate security or I wasn't comfortable enough with the number of bikes that I had registered to pull it off, and the pipe hitters really pulled it off for me, and thus I turned the lead over for them to lead the next run and the subsequent runs after that as they can. But, you know, there's other organizations that have really gone all out to make sure that we're in good state. Brookside Services, for instance, a small IT company in Northern Virginia, I was struggling. So I talked to a guy at my church, and I said, look, can you take over the Battlefield Run website for me? I need the word to get out there. I need to get out properly. And Sean Brady took it up, and he's been working this morning on the whole program to make sure that our conversation right now is on all the websites for both Bayside operations and this run. So hats off to those organizations that step forward.
And there at the very end is the good part. at least the good part for the people on the receiving end of your organization does, you tally it up right there at the barbecue. You give everybody a number so they all know what they contributed to. And that number is the amount of money raised to go and put into the scholarship fund for the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. How'd you do this last year?
Well, like I alluded to earlier, I was a little spooked that I wasn't going to get any big corporate assist this year, and I didn't, really. Everybody was pretty tight on their wallets. So I reached to a lot of local folks, and we pulled it out, John, $44,000.
And I remember 2 years ago it was about $40,000, and you were very impressed by that, given, obviously, the tight times have gone on for quite a few years, and yet you guys continue to grow that number a little bit every year, don't you?
Well, John, you know, this is a community. It's all about relationships. It's really not about dollars at all. It's all about doing the right thing with the right people at the right time and getting it done. So that was one of the things that helped me decide to, you know, turn this segment of turn this ride over to the Pipe Hitters. You know, the Archangels here, they're good brothers. They're from my community. I can trust them. I'll give them the battlefield run to lead for this next year, and I'm going to move on to something bigger that you and I need to talk about called the Wells Fargo Ride, which is going to be all the way from Florida to New York on segments, and then from New York all the way to California. So think about the Pony Express on motorcycles.
I really must find an excuse to ride along behind you guys for that one. You obviously have done a really great job with this, and the Special Operations Warrior Foundation has developed this fantastic reputation. Let's talk a little bit about the metrics of what you as an organization have accomplished over the past three-plus decades of operations since that first, shall we say, calamitous start to the present day. What kind of numbers are we talking about in terms of the kids? How many special operations kids have you put through college, university, vocational schools, and such?
Well, don't hold me to the exact figures, because I tend to look at the ones that we still have to deal with. So I know that we have 5 to 650 in the pipeline. Now, they could be from, you know, 3 years old to 13. I'm not so sure. Now, remember, my position up here in D.C., I'm a volunteer. I'm not paid by the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. I just simply live in Northern Virginia and know the territory. So they, you know, I volunteer my time for my Special Operations battlefield run and anything else that they might need in the D.C. area. But they're also well-connected. But there has to be 300 or 400 graduates out there now from this program, and that may be a little bit high at this juncture. But from the ones that have come to speaking engagements, you know, in the D.C. area, both in Tampa and here, you know, these are doctors and lawyers and really prominent people now in their early 30s. So I would say several hundred at least we've gotten through. Now, of course, just like any family with any children, I mean, we might have folks that need a little bit of additional help, but the bottom line is we have a 98% success rate.
Not bad, not bad at all. And you've got hundreds more who are being funded in schools right now, correct?
Yeah, and the thing is that folks need to understand that this isn't something they or their family have hanging over their heads to pay back. This is a complete and total grant. From the time you leave your house and go to school, we have you. So your tuition.
This is what they call a classic full ride at a college, right?
Got it. The only thing they have to do is do their part, okay? And so, you know, somebody from our community will be close by in case they get in trouble. But the bottom line is they have to work, and they have to do their piece. You know, no free rides, but we understand everybody has, you know, their hiccups and their downtimes. So we will respond in kind right there next to them. Like I told you earlier when the kid's car broke down, you don't leave him on the side of the road. You don't let him make the decision to forego his whole semester of school because, woe is me, I can't get to the airport. No, you go put him on the plane. You get his help him get his apartment set up. You get him into school and kind of kick him in the butt a little bit, you know?
You talked a little earlier about during the sequester, we lost four Rangers in Afghanistan. And we didn't just lose four Rangers who died. We had the better part of three dozen other personnel wounded, injured, badly hurt. And that meant that you had the better part of three dozen families who, frankly, the U.S. government by law at that time could not help. And you guys stepped in. Talk a little bit more about that and what it is that you functionally did to help those people during that bizarre time in American government.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that that's not something that's going to be repeated in the next couple of months, but I'll hold judgment on that. But that time was not pretty for anyone. And, you know, Joe McGuire had just taken his office, really, and he had to make some hard decisions. I mean, this is, you know, we lost four Rangers. We had 30 more critically injured. I mean, some of them to the point where we needed to get them back to Walter Reed immediately. And we had no government funds. And let me go back and just remind the folks that SOCOM and the commanders, you know, Admiral McCraven is tightly tied to the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, as is the Coalition Care for the Special Operations guys there, which is part of the command. So we're pretty tight-knit about getting information out fairly quick. And the call was made on that Sunday, and the decision was made on Monday morning that the Special Operations Warrior Foundation would pick up the slack for the United States government and take care of everything that was necessary for those four, and then also for the other 30 once we had the information about those families. But let me just digress for just one second. John, I think you'll appreciate this input here that happened on Capitol Hill from, you know, Congresswoman Kathy Casker is from Tampa, Florida. She owns that area. But she did an outstanding job in lifting up the Special Operations Warrior Foundation and SOCOM in particular. So let me just open this up, if you don't mind, and let you hear a few of these words.
Mr. Speaker, one of the harsh impacts of the Republican government shutdown is the fact that military families of our fallen heroes will no longer receive survivor benefits. They have been suspended. Meanwhile, on Sunday, 8,000 miles away in Afghanistan, four Army Rangers were killed and 30 others were wounded by a suicide bomber and an IED. That's why I urge approval today of legislation on the floor to provide the death benefits to our fallen soldiers. But I'd also like to salute a Tampa, Florida foundation, the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, that has stepped forward to fill the void and will provide four very generous grants to the families of our brave soldiers killed in action. They typically provide scholarships and financial aid and counseling to the families of Special Operations soldiers, and I'd like to thank them. Retired Air Force Major Steve McLeary, retired General.
So she goes on to name some of the folks at the main office down there in Tampa. But the bottom line is that, again, below the radar, this is how we get things done.
Outstanding. And I'd like to close up our talk about the Warrior Foundation just by talking a bit about the kids who've taken the scholarships and the grants, have gone and gotten their educations, and then have made the conscious choice to come back to the Warrior Foundation, the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, to go and help kids just like themselves who are dealing with the loss of a parent who is a special warfare professional and are now, in many cases, the first responders when bad news arrives.
Yeah, well, you know, some of the gals that are down there, especially there's two gals in particular, I won't put their names out here on the radio, but the bottom line is we brought in some of those kids that have been to school through us and now are back doing the, you know, doing the grassroots thing of being the first one that a kid gets to meet and assessing the needs and so forth. So it's all goodness and it's a full circle. And, you know, we will continue to do what we have to do for the next 20 or 30 years as long as it's necessary. So, you know, and I continue to do my work here in the D.C. area with Bayside Operations as well.
And talk a little bit about Bayside, because I know that's your new operation that you yourself are trying to put together and make work. Let's hear about what you have in mind for that.
Thanks, John. Bayside Operations, you know, was a vision about two years ago. I bought some property. I was down on the Chesapeake Bay visiting some friends, and I found a piece of property for sale that is, you know, right on the bay. So there's a beach, there's, you know, there's lots of quiet space and so forth, and it's just it's in a community, and it's just a nice place for folks to come, and you're only 90 minutes away from, well, from Northern Virginia. You're only an hour away from D.C. proper. So I had to speak with the wife, who's this, you know, the CFO of the house, and I said, can we do this? This is a $1 million piece of property. Can we do this and fix this up? Because I want to bring some of the vets down and, you know, first responders and so forth. So we have guys that come down to this beach house now, John. It's been revamped, and we're steadily working on new things down there. But to come down and be 60 minutes away from Washington, D.C., and just, you know, watch the birds and fish if you want and crab if you want and be away from the hustle and bustle of D.C. is phenomenal. And I, from a medical perspective, with a medical background, know that nothing good happens in a hospital over the weekend. You don't have the A-team. So I don't want to see the young kids, you know, popping the pills, or actually the young kids are probably on the, you know, playing internet, and the older guys, you know, taking pain medication. So let's get them out of there. Let's let them fish and hunt or just sit and read a book or just enjoy the site. So Bayside Operations is my 501c that's established, and you can look at it on the web there. Just, you know, go to Bayside Operations or Google it. The website will come immediately up as a place in Solomons Island, Maryland, and that's it's just a place where I can focus on one or two guys and their families at a time. Now, when I say that, you got to remember that even the Coalition Care and even Special Operations Warrior Foundation, we're inundated with, when we have one guy injured, there's a family of 20 that want to be there. We can't, you know, it's really tough to pay for all the hotel bills and so forth. They can only sustain so much. So my thought was to give them a break and get them away from the hustle and bustle of D.C. for a little bit, especially over the weekend, and just provide some light entertainment, a good meal, and get them out of the hospital setting.
And like so much of the quiet philanthropy that goes on in the special operations world, it's personal. It's not about thousands. It's about ones and twos and fives, correct?
That's where you make the difference, John. You don't make the difference by getting on a microphone in front of thousands. You personally have to touch each person, have a connection with that family, and make a difference. It is so much like it is our culture. There's nobody invited to that house at Bayside that I'm not comfortable with.
And with that, I would like to say thank you so much for coming on. Thank you to Oracle for giving you to us for an hour. Thank you to the Special Operations Warrior Foundation for letting you speak on their behalf. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in September and following you guys up to Gettysburg another time.
It's a pleasure being with you, John. We hope to get you out to Bayside Operations over the cold months so you can appreciate the bay right there when it's not frozen, but nice.
Indeed. Neil, thank you so much for being with us. We will talk to you soon, and we're going to call it a conversation at this point. Thank you.
Take care.
And with that, we are coming to the end of another Military Monday. Next week is going to be a very, very interesting show. I've been working for some months to get someone who is authoritative and knowledgeable on the subject of sexual harassment and assault in the military, where it comes from, how big a problem it is, and what the military currently does and doesn't do about this scourge. Our guest will be Kelly Kennedy of USA Today, a noted military author in her own right, and how to make this work. We look forward to talking to you, and I hope you all join us next week for Military Monday.
I took a flat to a pawn shop for a broken guitar. I took a flat to a pawn shop. How much is that guitar? I took a flat to a pawn shop. Got me that guitar. What's a flat in a pawn shop to me? I saw a man on the TV in a mask with a gun. A man on the TV, he had a 10-year-old son. I saw a man on the TV, his son had a gun. And he said that he's coming for me. I never loved a soldier until there was a war. I thought about tomorrow till my baby hits the floor. I only talk to God when somebody's about to die. I never cherished freedom. Freedom never cried.
Yeah.